I'm not a fan of him.
Hello and welcome to another episode of D&D Valiant Odyssey. Guys, it's season 3. I'm sitting around the table with the Forgotten Four. And in a moment, they're going to introduce themselves to you. And the question they're going to answer today is, what is a must-have item for your character in your bedroom? It does not have to be sexual.
There we go. Hello, my name's Trent, and I'm playing Baron Barnabas, who is a Goliath level 9 fighter. My must-have item in the bedroom is a weighted blanket. Doubles as an excellent sleeping apparatus, and you can carry it around and build your muscles during the day.
I like the idea it's called a sleeping apparatus.
It definitely has to be. It's not for comfort. It's for purpose with Baron Barnabas. Definitely.
Functional.
Exactly. Rengar.
Hello, I am Robert, and I play the role of Rengar the Moonlit, High Elf Ranger Rogue, level 9. His must-have item, probably no surprises, is a concealed dagger somewhere, or maybe two or three in his bedroom.
My name is Brett. I play Morven Othranus, High Elf Wizard, and he would always have a very comfy sitting chair because he would be reading late into the night.
G'day, I'm Jacko, and I play Gorgonbort the Buckler, a half-orc barbarian. Gorgonbort would not be able to go through life without a monster under his bed in the bedroom. Mm. It's always something.
Do you mean a monster or a can of monster?
Yeah, similar to Kyle. He needs a monster at all times. No, the reason's got to be there. He needs to kill something before bed just to make sure if the day went shit, he's got something there to kill to finish it
really
off on a good note.
Exclamation mark, full stop in the day. It's just like,
that's
done.
It. Yeah, and if he loses to that, well, fuck.
Is it with a ladle?
With a ladle, it doesn't matter. Anything that's in the room, it's usually got a ladle, but yeah.
And I am Aaron. I'm your dungeon master. And the thing that I need in my bedroom is complete darkness and silence, which sucks because that never happens. Last time you guys left off, you guys were making your way southwest towards a little village known as Delenby. And the reason you were heading there was because a master craftsman's student by the name of Karen resides near there, who you were trying to find in order to reforge Rengar's blade. Rengar's blade you discovered being a godly weapon that you required to defeat and kill some of the phylacteries of Delnak the Outcast. Whilst doing so, Morven, you gained the ability to use some teleportation spells, and you were unfamiliar with Delenby, so you teleported to the much familiar Menidus and decided to make the mountain track west towards your destination. Whilst going over the mountains, you found some old stomping grounds of Baron Barnabas, and in doing so, you found that a lot of his people may or may not have been captured by fire giants, and by may or may not, I mean they have. You quickly discovered that these creatures resided within the mountains as three of them ambushed you and told you that they had missed one, referring to Baron Barnabas. But with some smart work, some summoning of some spectral ancestral orcs and some bare-ass nudity, you guys were able to defeat these creatures, also with the help of a very powerful staff held by Morven and a wall of force. So, after you defeated these individuals, you tracked down the mountain, finding more instances of Goliath enslavement, and you made your way down into the forested area to the west, where you knew your path turned northwards. As you made your way through there, Rengar had a silent moment to look at the stars as Morven cast his tiny hut. And as you rest silently and safely, Rengar looked around in the trees and saw some of the native folks already having their eyes on you. So that's where we cut in, gentlemen, today. As you look around through the dome of Morven's tiny hut, you can see wooded trees that seem to surround you, the trickle of small streams that seem to head further to the west, and the slow flow of a river that seems to be heading off in the distance. You can see the sun rising, painting the whole picture with an orange hue, bouncing off of the cascading water and illuminating the trees around you. You can see the foliage and grass looks fresh, untouched. And as you look around, it actually looks very peaceful, something very estranged to you guys in your current situation as you've been traveling for so long. You hear birds chirping, you hear the sound of nature. And then in the distance, you hear something else. You hear a melody of singing. It sounds joyful, coming from the north. It's in a language some of you don't understand, but others of you know that it is a very old dialect of Elvish, and it whistles on the breeze as it does. Immediately as that happens, you also smell the scent of cooking fish.
Hmm. Do you guys, do you smell that?
The cooking of meat.
Hmm. And the, do you hear that? Can you hear the sounds, Morven?
Sounds elven. Our friend Aron did tell us that elves in this area were friendly.
Hmm. They might have been the ones that I just saw creeping amongst the trees earlier. So perhaps we should go and pay them a visit and make ourselves known and make ourselves known that we're not a threat for starters. So
creeping elves don't sound that friendly to me.
Knowing our past, you guys will go speak first and we'll hang behind. Ready, I suppose.
Well, given the place we're at.
They are sneaking.
Yeah, I think they're just cautious.
They were described as sneaky. I've met enough elves.
They were described as sneaky.
Oh, I'm described as sneaky. Is there a problem with that?
Yeah.
That's fine.
Thanks for yes anding.
Good to see that after all we've been through, we can still come to this conclusion.
We can discriminate based on stinkiness. Your stinkiness is right up there.
It is. It is indeed. Well, I think we'll tread cautiously because I assume they'll probably not like the look of you two. Maybe you'll be all right.
I don't think elves are a fan of me or my kind.
Not particularly. We're still warming to you, yes.
Yep.
So, maybe if we go first, Morven, do you reckon they should keep their distance a little bit? Or?
No, we should be able to go all together. I mean, 2 hours in the party should at least get an introduction.
Maybe we should restrain them and act like they're our prisoners.
Yeah, I think we're way bigger. It's going to feel odd.
No, that should be fine. They just seem friendly. They're just cautious, I think. And as you can see, the wilderness surrounding us is something that we haven't beheld in quite a while. So maybe there's a reason that they keep this place so untouched and are a bit wary of visitors.
Strange that they're cooking fish. Last time we went fishing, you two weren't very good.
Maybe they're a different type of elf.
You could ask if they have alligator.
Or crocodile.
Crocodile.
Maybe we're north far enough to get alligator here as well.
Well, we're out in the mountains, aren't we?
No, you're off to the west now. Okay. So you're at the foothills of mountains, but it's not a far trek to the coast.
It is morning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The sun up.
Mm-hmm.
You
may hit that long rest button, boys, and safely do so.
Yeah.
All right, let's go say hi and see what information we can glean. You might want to ask about your family, Barnabas, see if they know of any fire giants in the area.
Yeah, we could.
He says dismissively. All right.
The elves don't. Elves aren't known for their helping nature.
Okay.
I'll remember that next time.
Yes, future. Last wall of force I burn on you, assholes.
All this speaking of stabbing earlier on, it's happening.
Yeah, this is just a PvP episode. Okay, you guys make your way through the trees, following the sound of the quite lovely singing in this morning and coupled with the orange light of the sun and the flow of water. It is definitely a relaxing sight. Morven, the tiny hut behind you slowly dissipates and dissolves. And as you guys make your way through, the first sights that you begin to see are what look like ruins, just these stone protrusions coming from the earth, but obviously seemingly masoned. You can see that they have been modified to look like they have some canvas or netting-like roofing. And throughout those, you also see some tents and some huts that seem to be strung together with various different riverside equipment. So you can see various shells of turtles that seem to be making some of the housing here. And you can also see different large branches of trees, like the ones that you see in swamps that seem to stand above. You can see houses made between those, and you can see racks full of dried and salted fish that seem to be there. And the next thing that you see after you see these structures is a entire group of native looking elves. You can see their clothing seems to be naturally made. You can see that they have quite long and unkept hair. Most of their skin seems to be a shade of blue, and you can see children running around and playing in this area. As you look beyond, you can see a large river and a waterfall flowing to the easternmost section of the village. And through the trees, you can see what looks like a large rocky temple. But over on the westernmost side, you do also see what looks like some of these elves fishing with spears. And most notably, you can see two of them standing on the backs of these large crabs that seem to be wading through the area as they stab into the ocean and pull out different kinds of fish. You also see some cast netting. And Morven, probably you're the one that notices the most, but every single one of these individuals They almost glint in the sun, and it catches your eye because you think it's a pigment of their skin, but as you look, you can see that they are all in some way, shape, or form adorning diamonds. Every single one of them. Children, women, old, young. You can see they all are wearing them. As you approach, you can see a small child run across your path and they stop. You can see it's a small girl and she looks up at you and you watch as she holds up her hand, palm facing you. She drops one finger and then she bows and then she runs away. You take this as a gesture of hello. What do you guys do?
What did that mean?
What was that sneaky elf up to?
I think that was a greeting. Is there a party of adult elves that have clocked us yet? Or
As you begin to make your way into the actual township, I say loosely, you guys can see that you are turning some heads, and there does seem to be a gathering space where a lot of the living quarters seem to be surrounding, if you will. As you look to this space, you can see probably the oldest elf that you see in this community. You can see his black unkempt hair has got shades of grey through it. You can see he's got this diamond adorned breastplate that seems to shine in the sun, and you can see a large headdress that seems to have like a diamond the shape of a tangerine on top of it. And as you approach, you can see him stand, and you watch as he puts both of his palms out and bows, and then he holds a hand up and does a similar gesture, dropping one finger, but he seems to be looking at Baron Barnabas. He moves over to you, and in giant you hear him say,
"We have been waiting for one of your kind. You are a season late. The offering is ready."
I'm not familiar with your offering. Apologies, I've been in the mountains for some time. Please elaborate a little bit.
Your people and ours trade. We offer you food and fish. You offer us protection, and you help us with our dwellings, building, moving things. It is a symbiotic partnership, but we have not seen any of you in some kind. Honestly, the stockpile is getting quite large. Is this all you brought to carry it back to your mountain homes?
These friends, in quotation marks, are not here to haul luggage.
What are they here for? Couriers? No, much too small for protection.
We're looking for a fork in a river. Is that further north of town?
Do you speak giant?
No, never mind me. Comprehend languages, motherfucker, I do now. No, well, obviously not.
Maybe I suggest we switch to a common, so companions can chime in.
He ruffles his brow and he starts to speak, but he does so in Elvish. You get the idea that he probably doesn't know common.
Okay.
So in Elvish, he's still addressing you, whether you understand Elvish or not. And he says,
"The stores are just over here. We've kept them all safe and salted."
That language is no good to me.
In common, I turn to Barnabas and I say, what's he saying?
They trade with the mountain folk, with the Goliath. He's got food for them in exchange for protection and shelter or building homes down here. Obviously, we can't fulfill that. We might have to relay the story of the giants to him, the fire giant.
I'll leave that one to you then. But can you ask him about
Walking River?
At this stage, Ranga's just conversing with some of the children that have gathered in the area, and he's sort of like using his Ray of Frost ability to sort of like do little ornate gifts for them and stuff like that. Just trying to, he seems to have softened a little bit after all that he's been through, and he's trying to make his mind up.
Never mind distracting people. I fear we've started this conversation on a bit of a rude front. My name's Barnabas. What's your name?
In giant, he bows and says, "I am Memnon. I am the leader of the coastal elves here at Delimbia, and chosen one of Eclepia's Tears, keeper of her grotto. Welcome. Your people have always been welcome here, and any guest of yours is a guest of ours as well."
I fear my people have run into some hardships in the mountain. We ran into a group of fire giants that had been involved in abducting the Goliath for what appeared to be slavery. We've managed to slay a few, but we didn't recover any Goliath, so
nothing but towering trouble. Inferno have not shown their faces in the mountains for years. Something must have stirred them from below. This is dire, for their reach will soon spread, and they may encounter our bounds. But fear not. When the Goliath cannot protect us, we rely on one other." He nods.
What is this other?
He
points over to where you see or saw the larger rocky temple through the the tree-like structures before, and you follow the river up with your eyes, and as you see it just perched within the trees, you can see the undergrowth and natural life has definitely taken over this space once more. But then through there, you also see, you probably see it more so, Morven, the familiar hut is the one that you had previously seen in your vision belonging to Karen. He points through the trees and he says,
just an old visitor who has decided to remain.
We see the hut. We think we're also seeking this Karen, Centaur.
We call him the Metal Weaver. Some do refer to him as Karen.
Is he known for his prowess with the blade as well?
Oh, yes. We have not much use, as the materials that we use for weaponry aren't really his purview, but in his youth, he was one of the finest smiths that the nation to the south, known as Capital, has ever seen.
Yes, we know he's a smith, but he provides protection as well, obviously. That's what you're relying on him for as well.
Oh, yes, he speaks and is one of the few that does hear the voice of those beyond.
And he's nodding like, how the fuck do you not know this?
Yeah.
Like, that's the vibe that he's giving you.
No, I knew he was an excellent worker of metal, and I could also swing that metal. I suppose it goes hand in hand.
His arcane abilities are far beyond anything that I have ever encountered myself. It extends far beyond the elemental. Some say his gifts do extend into foresight. Others are not so receptive.
Here's the reason we're here. Would you mind accompanying us down there? Thing is your element.
Oh, of course, of course.
Doing the introductions and all works out well. We might be able to restore the freedom of the Goliath to restore common trade after we take care of some business.
Our kindness of strangers is definitely few and far between, but we will take you on your generosity, Barnabas.
Do you have anyone that can help us free the giant, free the Goliath?
He gestures around. He says,
we are peaceful people. The stretches of mankind have not reached this deep into the wood as of yet, and Karen has done a good job of making sure that none of those disturbances find us.
Maybe prudent to learn some military capabilities in the short.
He pats you on the shoulder and he says,
our finest warriors, although blessed by Haclepia, would be no match for a towering inferno. Our sticks would break upon their hardened armor, even our blessings.
And he touches the diamonds, would not protect us.
You seem to be all adorned, encrusted with diamonds. A local tradition, or?
Yes, there is a grotto nearby. One that...
somewhere with immense heat and pressure, just creating these out of blue.
Haclepia gifts them to us from the grotto. There is enough to go around for all of our peoples. They are sacred. The ceremony of the tears happens once per solstice, where all of us are blessed once more with a new font of sparkling rock, the tears of Haclepia herself.
And it's at that moment you can see the children that Rengar was playing with, as he had fashioned an ice sculpture for some of them. One of them had run away, and you can see an individual with blue skin, probably about 10 or so years old. You can see he's got like a ponytail that goes up and down into a plait, and you can see that he's got like beads throughout it, and you watch as he like pulls out this necklace, and it's just a twine, and down at the bottom it's just got this diamond that seems to be molded in with like tree sap or something, and he just puts it on your neck. It's like the size of your thumbnail. He looks towards you, Memnon does, and he says,
it appears that your elven friend has already gained some affinity with our youth. He must be quite good with children. Karen would be well arisen by now. He generally rises before the dawn to commune with the one that he loves the most.
And he's like, he's nodding profusely.
Lead the way.
I'm blindly nodding from not knowing anything that's going on.
Yeah. Like a bobblehead. Okay, so he leads you through the village and you see many instances of the same. You do actually see some taller, more athletic looking coastal elf individuals, and you note that they're sort of standing in groups of three, and they seem to be pretty wary of you guys, but since you're walking with Memnon, they give it sort of no mind. And as Memnon walks, you can see he was once tall, but his crooked spine and older age has sort of gotten him to be the same sort of height as, say, Morven, for example. As you begin making your way through, you do see the large temple-like structure made of sandstone and rock. You can see that there are trees and branches that seem to have busted their way through walls, and some portions of it seem to be broken down. You can see a small trickling stream that moves through the middle, of this area, and on the front, you can see what looks like an engraving of a large human individual with long flowing hair that seems to go down into the waves. You can see him holding a massive trident, and he seems to be slaying what looks like a carving of a large sea monster. If you want to know, you can roll a religion check, but I feel most of you would know that that is Sorshin, the god of the sea. If you wanted to know more, you can roll. But as you begin to move past this, towards the back of that structure, you do see the lean-to hut, the small garden that seems to be tended to, and you hear the clanging getting closer and closer of what sounds like a forge. The first thing that you see is the back end of a horse, and you can see black and white splotches throughout this, and you can see a tail sort of whipping. You look towards the body and you can see what looks like leather armor. You can see a hammer, and you can see a mask being worn and white hair that seems to be in a long ponytail. A long gruff beard that seems to reside on the individual. And as he turns around and sees you, you can see he's got a heavy scar across one of his eyes. You can see he is wearing a leather apron, but as you approach, he sort of takes off his mask, takes off the apron, and you can see he's now shirtless. But he's got a massive scar across his chest that seems to denote a previous wound, which, Rengar, you would look at and see if that was a wound he sustained, that's a deadly one. But here he stands before you.
Rengar will put his hand on the old gentleman's shoulder and thank him in Elvish for it. He has just trusted Barnabas, knew what he was saying. I'll take a back seat.
The results are here. You do watch before he does take his leave. Memnon moves to Karen. You can see him open his palms once again, bow, and hold up the hand gesture, dropping one finger as he'd done so before. And Karen does the same, and then Memnon turns and shuffles his way back, leaving the four of you. Karen steps his way out, his hooves clopping on the mixed sort of ground that you see, and he moves a finger across to you, and he points to you, Morven, and he says, You are the one, yes?
Yes. Do you remember us? We had a bit of a time away. For us, it's only been months, but for you, it must be years since you've seen us last.
Five years ago sounds correct.
The sparrows have since been silenced, we hear. Although you seem to be standing still.
Our condolences for what happened. You were good people.
He just nods solemnly. He says, I've lost many friends over the years. He seems like numb to it.
You've journeyed here. You've gained my curiosity. You spoke of my old master, Tiro.
We were sent to track down a tree, and while there, we found an ancient tome. And within it, a great evil, Dalnak. I don't know if you would have heard of him, but he was trapped there for many millennia. He has since escaped, and we find that he is a blight on this world. And we are on a mission to destroy him, along with some allies from a guild in Cadmia. A way to destroy him is to reforge God's weapons. And the only way to do that is a master smith blessed by...
As you're speaking, once you had mentioned the forging of the godly weapons, he just bolts his arms. The rest of you can roll insight checks. Morven has been speaking.
I'll roll insight, but I'll keep talking and I'll say, as Tiro has done before, you helped us out once upon a time when we were there before with the weapon for one of our comrades here, and you can obviously see the size.
He unfolds his arms and he moves over to Gorgonbort. As he does, he holds out two palms and looks to you, and as he approaches you, he smells like ash and flame, but he looks old, but he's like old strong. You can see the muscles on him is just forge worn for a very long time, and he holds out his strong arms as if to say, let me see the hammer.
I very hesitantly give it to him.
You watch as he sort of strokes it, and as he does, he moves his thumb across the head of it, and he says,
many enemies felled.
Many more.
You've done its master proud.
You watch as he like brushes a tear away. He hands it back to you.
Tiro had a knack for finding those worthy of his craft. One I unfortunately don't share.
Insight check.
16.
Yeah, you have no real idea, but Barnabas and Gorgonbord, as you're looking to him and Morven speaking, you have never seen a more disinterested individual. He's curious about the weaponry, but he doesn't seem to care about the whims of what ails you, so to speak. He looks towards you, Morven,
You honestly have my sympathies. You really do. Delnak, you said his name was?
Yes. Oh, it's Tossler, yeah.
Delnak is the latest string in a vast history of ancient evils that have come to rise and tussle mankind. It's a never-ending struggle. This is just the newest of which. They will always be around. One will rise to replace him if you slay him. You live long enough, you tend to see the true nature of mankind.
You seem weak. What? So you just want to roll over and let this one? What do you mean? It's like the classic, I've given up.
I once had a friend like you. He's fishing for a name.
Gorgs.
Gorgs. He raises an eyebrow in disbelief. And he says,
but he, like all others, died in the name of honor, virtue, glory.
But did the threat at the time pass?
Obviously not.
Hmm?
It grew into a different form. Whether you call it Delnak, whether you call it something else, whether you call it an evil god or an ancient monster or an evil being, there's always some form of darkness wishing to consume the light. Answer me this. He points to you. You don't seem like the kind to be tied up in the petty whims of what seems like a very civil affair. What is your tie to this? I know many of your kind who would simply, as you say, roll over or be ignorant. Live out their meager 80 years in happy solitude, killing things across the plain, conquering while they can.
That's essentially what I'm doing. I'm just doing it with a bigger cause, Thor. I get to travel.
Do
I get
you
to
think,
kill things. I get to get these weapons.
And what will you take with you when you go?
Want to go? Go where? You think I'll die?
Ah, Gorgs. He pats you on the shoulder and he says,
so you just live your sad little life here with your diamonds and whatnot and...
I have found
that's what it is.
I know what it is you're doing, and you can see you've struck a temper chord.
Oh yeah.
And he says, these word games. What you're trying to do, evoke an emotional response, try and guilt me into.
He can't make the weapon. I'm not a fan of him. I intended to cut you off.
He turns around on you.
Okay.
I'll step forward towards Karen and I'll say, Karen, I believe that you know very well how to do the things we're asking of you.
You are not strong enough.
Doesn't matter if we're strong enough or not, but we're willing to try. We're willing to at least give the people some form of peace.
Tell me, would you give a weapon of immense power, let's say the bow on your back, would you give that to one of the children in the village and intend
honest,
them to use it for an appropriate cause?
If I'm being honest, Aaron, I believe it's that weapons that choose the people. I'll gesture towards Barnabas and I'll say,
I know what you're doing too. You're using my teachings of Nicestus to try and sway your point.
You can believe what you will, Karen, but I'm just merely suggesting that you see before you four individuals here. You're judging us on face value. You're judging us by whatever your little brain is trying to perceive as something that's not going to happen or won't work or everything. But we can tell you we have managed many challenges. We have faced many evils. And I, for one, have faced a great deal of evils before. And I can see that judging by the looks of that scar, I'd say you fell. And I'd say you've been reborn. And I'd also say that maybe you should give us the opportunity to at least give some semblance of peace back to people for a little bit, at least. You can go on living your life. You can send us on our way. But give us the chance, at least.
You want to know what I see?
Do tell.
I see a group of individuals who have no strings or connections to anything other than each other, driven by a purpose. And once that purpose is done, you will have nothing. So let me tell you something for free. Perhaps you could live out the remainder of your day finding what truly mattered. Perhaps you could find somebody to hold you during the night. Perhaps you could find a friend to enjoy a cold mead with, because everybody's days are numbered.
That is for not you to decide, Karen.
Aren't we trying to just give them more numbers?
We can each other decide.
The reason kids don't have bows in their hands is because that we're going and doing the dirty work for them.
Yes, I totally agree with my friends here. I believe that what you see as an end and a meaningless task or something like that, for us, it makes sense to give people peace.
And like you said, there'll always be another one afterwards.
Can you roll in an either a persuasion check or a deception check? Keeping in mind that although you are noble on your task, yes, you guys know that there is some semblance of responsibility on your part for this. If you know what I mean by that. So persuasion or deception? Because
saying because we released.
He's wondering now why you're so invested in this task as four individuals, and as a seasoned adventurer, he may pick up on the fact that you may have played a part in this particular.
You and Tiro and a bunch of the sparrows accepted us once before and gave us the opportunity to do what was right and what was good in the world. Now, whether you see fit right now that that's the right thing or not, that's up to you. But once upon a time, you gave four lowly adventurers a chance. And now, well, I guess that's up to you again.
That wasn't me. That was Tiro. And he's dead.
Yes, he is dead. But, you know, it's only dead when you let them be dead to you.
Nah, you can roll with advantage.
Heron, they say the only thing that evil needs to succeed is for good men to do nothing.
Dirty 20.
I went for persuasion. I only rolled an 8.
22.
Okay, so he does look across all of you, and he does rest for a moment on you, Morven, after you say that. And he looks towards Gorgonbort, and he says,
You're desperate. Desperate men are not always good men. You have at the very least piqued my curiosity of the blade you hold. I can see that your friend, gestures towards Barnabas, has a blade upon his back. It's like seeing a fish walking on land. It does not belong there. But show me the shards.
He reaches for his pack and he brings the leather-bound pieces out. And have you got somewhere I can place these? I hold them in great value.
He watches, he gestures in towards his simple hut and you all follow him in. You can see that there is like an open space. You can see in the middle there seems to be a table that he has fish and food on that seems to be brought to him. There's a basket of various different berries and fruits and things like that seem to be gathered. And there's even like a pile of diamonds and necklaces similar to the one that you received, as if the children has also come and given him some various gifts as well.
Mm.
In the corner as well, you do see wrapped in leather, very dusty, an extremely well-crafted spear. You know that to be his adventuring weapon prior. Seems to be untouched to the point where there are cobwebs hanging off it, to the point where there seems to be a layer of dust that is collected along the ground in the corner that it's at. He gestures to the table.
And I'll unfurl them on there and place them as they would look normally as a blade. And obviously you can tell that it's broken and there is little bits missing. And
must be inferior. One of the god's weapons. Never happened to the Sunglaive.
If you keep wielding it in May.
He holds his hands over. He looks towards you as you're staring at him. He closes his eyes. You can see orange glow from his hand. And you all feel warm. You watch as his eyes go completely orange and flash. And you watch as he opens his eyes again. And he says,
well, this is indeed the shadowed blade of Gorsi in two parts. A godly blade is not easily reforged, and it can take some sacrifice from the intended wielder to do so. I, looks towards Gorgonbort, have never done or succeeded in this. I have only heard and been taught what Tiro has taught me. I could attempt to reforge this blade, but I could also destroy it beyond repair. The consequences of damaging an item favored by the gods, I am not sure of. In either instance, you need a master craftsman or a godly forge, and potentially some more formulaic recipes that need more time first. This is not a simple fix. This is not a matter of bellowing my irons, placing my hammer upon the broken parts and hoping that it reforges. Yes, that will create a blade, but the magic within, that is what truly needs to be rekindled.
Have you seen the godly forge before? Or we understand it's located in a place called the Cradle of Life.
Tiro spoke of it with great favor. It is indeed in the Cradle of Life, but there are other forges that would suffice if you had someone of the skill level required to forge the blade. As I said, a master craftsman could forge it in any place. Any craftsman could forge it in the godly forge, given they have the blessing of Nakestus as well.
As you'd understand, very few have that blessing.
None I now know of personally.
Well,
you said you came from Cadmia.
The High Priest of Nakestus was under the impression that the only place this could be reforged along with the Master Craftsman was the Cradle. Are you indeed a Master Craftsman? Well, you know Tiro was, but the High Priest was...
Master Craftsman needs to attain an expertise through pilgrimage. My hoofs have traveled far and wide, but my quest was not always aligned with learning the craft.
it was helping friends. Looks like Gorgonborg giving people more day. And now they've all run out. So I was taught by one of the greatest I have studied. If I am to do this and be successful, it will be a miracle.
Well, we knew this wasn't going to be a walk in the woods, so to speak.
But as you said before, we seem desperate. We do have one weapon already. This blade, however, was a gift from my father to myself and my brother. Bringing it back to its glory would be an ideal situation for us, but...
This weapon, it never knew glory. This weapon was owned by the god of trickery and deceit. Its champion and its wielder had similar motivations. Do you see my reservation, Rengar?
Well, understanding that, I do. And I understand the risks of wielding such a blade, but just because a blade or a weapon or a tool is used for nefarious tasks or good tasks, either or, it depends on the wielder. And sometimes you have to have a little bit of faith that these things can be tricked themselves into working as a tool for that person.
An elf who intends to trick the god of trickery.
Well, we only live once, don't we, Karen? And for how long, who knows?
What is your next step if I am to refuse?
If you're to refuse, then I assume we either go with what we've got, which is two fabulously formed weapons, one by a god and one by your, probably the guy that you looked up to for a long time and taught you these ways. So we make do, we take on the challenges ahead, and we don't look back.
So with or without me, you will be completing this task.
We'll do what's necessary. If we can get to the Cradle of Life, we shall. Morven is quite adept at traveling, but we don't really know anyone that's been there before, so we can't find a way.
When you get there?
Well, I guess we'll have to be in the same situation we are now, trying to convince people to do it.
Idiots.
Idiots, fools, we've heard it all before. Thalnak himself said it, Karen, and we're still here. So, and we're still willing to do the right thing, or still willing to try and give some semblance of peace.
You'll go and fight this great evil that you appear to believe is greater than anything you've ever faced with a truly glorious weapon, yes, created by Tiro, and this godly blade, the blade upon your back, Goliath. It still sleeps. It has not chosen you as worthy. There is potential to be unlocked within that piece of craftsmanship that you yourself has not even realized. You are naive. You are fools. You are stupid. But if I let you out of my sight and you die on this fool's quest, and I could have helped, then that is one more string of guilt that I will not live to bear.
It seems that Master Karin here has made up his mind to possibly, and Rengar gestures to his blade, pick up a blade once more and lend his skills as an adventurer and a craftsman to us. Am I right in assuming that?
Does that mean that we need to take you to the Cradle of Life, the God's Forge?
There is one closer.
Would it be beneath the mountain that we just came through?
Guilt is a powerful motivator. We had a unfortunate hand in releasing Dalnak, and every death and every bit of hurt that he unleashes on this world all falls back on us. We could have died in that tome at his hand and he would never have escaped. Admittedly, in our defense, we did not realize who he was and what we were doing. Most little consultation when we realize the horrors he's done and will do.
How ironic.
Ironic or fateful, one could
say. No, you misunderstand. Ironic that you are to slay this tyrant with a blade of trickery.
After being tricked?
Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves. You're assuming that that can happen. We hope that. But as you said, idiots and fools sometimes make mistakes on the battlefield too. So one extra blade or spear would be handy.
And two gods' weapons is better than one.
I suggest you rest this evening. For tomorrow you will be diving within the caverns of what these people call the Towering Inferno, some of the greatest craftsmen, to walk the continent, reside below those rocks.
You know the fire giants, do you?
We'll be borrowing their forge tomorrow.
Well, we'll have our work cut out for us, boys. I think it's time to light things up, don't you?
I like an all-in battle.
He hits you on the shoulder.
They already know me.
I misspoke before, Gorgs. I really haven't met anyone like you.
May I also leave one extra thing with you?
You are pushing your luck.
Oh no, it's not to be forged. And he will present Karen with the longsword, one of the longswords that we gathered from the tomb, you know, the ones that we collected, because it has the, doesn't have the blessing of Nicestus with the light on there as well.
No, that's Idris.
Idris, sorry. God. Yeah. And I'll leave him with one of those as well.
He does take that sword, and he...
As a reminder of what people give and what they are, what they, what's the word I'm trying to look for, sacrifice in order to keep things safe.
A reminder.
That's what we're trying to do.
My friend wielded one of these.
Maybe that was his.
No, he is far beyond this plane. He puts it down and you leave.
You see in the distance, as you look over your shoulder, moving your way back towards the village, you can see just orange glowing light exude from the hut in pulses. It seems he is communing with this blade to find the formula to reforge it. As you make your way back, the village of Delambia is yours. That's it for this week's episode of D&D Valiant Odyssey. As always, we want to thank you and also congratulate you for tuning in this far. The cast of that episode was Rob as Rengar, Trent as Baron Barnabas, Jacko as Gorgonbort, and Brett as Morven, with me, Aaron, as your Dungeon Master. This week on D&D Valiant Odyssey, we're excited to announce some new ways that you can connect with us as podcasters. So as usual, we have the Instagram account that anybody has access to. Go on over and follow us at D&D Valiant Odyssey on Instagram. You can find us and connect with us through our stories. You can DM us directly and tell us exactly what you think of our show. We're pretty responsive on there, so feel free to leave your honest review. Speaking of reviews, you cannot understand how much those help our show get noticed by other people who love D&D. So please, if you're an Apple user, make sure you go and leave an honest review on their platform. You might find it being read out loud after the show or displayed on our social media. Another way you can interact with us, and something new that we're trying out right now, is underneath the episode, if you're a Spotify user, you can see that there are some polls and questions that you might like to answer. The first of which asks you what you thought of the show, and the second of which, from now on, will always be asking you guys, our listeners, exactly the same question that our players get asked at the start of each session. So have your say here at D&D Valiant Odyssey and share the fun, just as our players are, each and every episode. Once again, we want to thank you guys for tuning in, and as always, be valiant.